The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
On Tuesday morning, I gave a talk that I called Things as They Are, exploring this possibility of opening to just what's happening in the moment, in each moment of our experience. And as I went through that topic on Tuesday, I covered about half of what I wanted to say, and so I thought I would do part two tonight. And I think I can do this in a way such that you won't feel like it's half a talk. So this is Things as They Are continued, this talk this evening. We can really think of meeting our experience, meeting what's happening in the present moment. You know, just the experience of life that I was talking about in the guided meditation, just meeting that as when we can meet that and know that we're meeting it. So being aware of what's happening while it's happening, that's a kind of a basic definition of mindfulness practice. We often think of meditation as having some kind of specific goal, like we're going to pay attention to our breath or get some state of concentration. But the kind of basic practice of mindfulness can be very, very simple. It's just knowing what's happening in the present moment while it's happening. So this is a beginning of opening to and exploring being with things as they are. There's a number of places in the Buddhist teachings where he uses a phrase, and it's translated often as one understands as it actually is, the arising of sight. One understands as it actually is sound or smell or taste or touch or even things happening in the mind. So this phrase, as it actually is translating a Pali phrase, yata bhuta, which kind of in its an actual translation of it, well, as it actually is a pretty good translation, but it has also the quality of things as they have come to be. And so we begin to get a sense that what we are experiencing as it actually is in this moment is happening because of conditions, because of all of the experiences of our life before this moment, because of choices that we've made, because of not even random, but just things outside of our control, like the weather or whether there was construction on the freeway, for instance. You know, how we are in this moment is a product of so many conditions from our families, from how we were treated on the playground, to the kind of cultural backgrounds that we were raised with. So the experience of right now is not a random experience. It has come to be based on many, many, many conditions, way too many conditions for us even really to fathom. And if we even just reflect for a few moments on why are you here tonight? You know, what conditions brought you here tonight? You know, there's kind of maybe the obvious conditions that, you know, you got in your car or you got on your bike or you walked here. You made a decision at some point to come. But there's so many other conditions too, you know, conditions that like, what was the first thing that ever introduced you to IMC? How did you ever find out about this place in the first place? There are stories I know of people who have been listening to Audio Dharma for a long time and then finally learn that it's just around the corner. You know, so just the condition of having somebody told you about a podcast or who knows, there's so many different conditions. And what was the condition for that to happen? You know, when we start exploring it, we cannot list all of the conditions for why we are here tonight. And so this recognition of the conditioned nature of what has happened actually can help us to begin to maybe not take it so personally and to begin to be curious about, well, what is it actually that's happening in this moment? What is actually going on? There's sights and sounds and smells and tastes and touch and all the stuff going on in the mind. One of the reasons why this exploration is so foundational in the teachings of the Buddha, this exploration for notice, just some experience as it actually is because we don't actually usually know experience as it actually is. We have so many ideas, views, opinions, agendas, reactions to what's happening or to our histories or just to what's going on, that often when we're meeting our experience, when we are noticing what's happened, it's not, we're not seeing it as it actually is because there's so many other things going on. There's kind of a cute little way to frame this. It's like we don't see things as they are. We see things as we are. When we notice something happening in the world, something pleasant or unpleasant, our relationship to that is coloring how we're experiencing it. And this coloring that happens as we meet experience, this flavoring or, you know, just a perspective that we bring to experience. It might be as obvious as an emotional reaction that's flavoring our experience, or it might be as subtle as just some agenda that we have to accomplish that's flavoring our experience. But that flavor is impacting how we take in, and actually, how we take in experience, but actually it also influences what we take in. So as an example, there's a kind of a teaching that in Buddhist psychology has an understanding that most of us have a kind of a particular familiar orientation to the world. And in Buddhist psychology, that, you know, that personality types, we could call them in Buddhist psychology, there's three rough areas of personality type. One that's oriented to the world from a perspective of wanting and kind of greed, a perspective that's oriented to the world from aversion, and a perspective that's oriented to the world from kind of confusion. And most of us have one of these flavors that we tend to meet the world with. When I first heard about this teaching, there was no question in my mind which flavor I met the world with. It's like I knew even before I started, you know, meditating, that I tended to not like things. You know, it's like I'd go into a place and it'd be like, yeah, that's wrong, and that's wrong, and that needs to be fixed, and that needs to be changed. And so that was my orientation to the world. There's a kind of a little quick quiz we can give ourselves about this personality type. So if you walk into a room where you walk into a new room, a room you've never been in before, what's the first thing that you orient to? Is it like if you walked in here, it might be, wow, it's so peaceful in here. It's so simple. It's like there's not a lot of distractions. That's nice. Or perhaps you walk into this room and it's like, wow, it's really boring in here. There's not much going on. It's just all gray. I don't like that. They should add some pictures like those tankas they have in Tibetan temples. That adds a lot of color. Or you might walk into this room and kind of be, huh, what's going on here? Do I take my shoes off? What's going on? What am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to close my eyes? So these three kind of perspectives of when you go into a room, you tend to orient towards something that you like. You may have that kind of perspective of a greedy temperament. If when you go into a room and you orient to things that you feel like need to be fixed or changed or things that are wrong or things that could be better, you know, it's like maybe you've got that aversive temperament like me. It's like, you know, yeah, that needs to be changed, that needs to be changed, that could be fixed. Or maybe if you walk into the room and it's kind of like there's confusion, that may be the orientation of kind of like, not really being able to settle or connect with what's going on. So the confused temperament. So these does this resonate? Do any of you have a sense of where you might fall in this line? I mean, it's pretty broad. It's pretty, you know. And we all, of course, have all of these flavors, you know. Yeah?
I do have a question.
Why don't you use the mic? And there's a switch on the side of it.
So when I orient with a room, you list this sense of confusion, but I don't like notice things. I'm generally agenda driven. Like I'm thinking about what I'm going to be doing in this room.
Uh huh.
And I'm not really confused about things. It's just like I'm not really noticing.
Yes. So the not noticing is another flavor of that. Yes.
I'm being very practical and like I'm here to do this or that or whatever. Would that be?
I think like it would be the kind of temperament that doesn't tend to connect to what's here. So that's another way to put it. That you know that sometimes it results in confusion. Sometimes it's just kind of you're in your own space of what you know what you're doing. So you know the one. Teacher talks about this pattern. This one teacher, Sharon Salzberg, is a self-identified delusion type, you know, that where she has this kind of flavor of just basically not noticing things. You know, she's more involved in what's going on in her own experience. And she said, apparently we make really good travel companions. Because I was traveling with a friend, and that friend, you know, we'd walk into a room, and you know, the beds in the room, you know, when they rented a hotel or something, and her friend would say, "Oh, can I have that bed?" Immediately, as soon as she walked into the room, and Sharon's like, "Yeah, sure." And then she discovered either it was the bed next to the window, or the bed with the mosquito net that didn't have holes in it. And, you know, she just hadn't really been attuned to that because she'd been someplace else. So, you know, just these kinds of things. It's just you know, we can just see that it's the same room we're walking into, but different things that we connect to or don't connect to. So a kind of a proclivity or a pattern or a habit of mind, like in your example, just of being more involved with, well, what am I going to do here? So I'm not so attuned to what's in the room. You know, that has an impact on what happens to you when you walk into a room. For others, you know, the impact is that they orient to things that are unpleasant. That was actually an amazing learning for me as I began exploring my own mind. At one point, my teacher asked me to just notice what the next most obvious thing in your experience is. He was a encouraging me towards something that we sometimes call choiceless awareness. And I have sense, as you will hear in a minute, I don't like that term, choiceless awareness. But you know, he was encouraging me just to notice, without picking something, what does the attention like naturally land on? And so I did this for a few minutes while he was sitting there with me. And after a few minutes of that, I said, you know, this cannot be choiceless, because every single experience that my attention landed on was unpleasant. I said, there's got to have been either neutral or some pleasant experiences happening, but my mind didn't pick those things out. And that was a really interesting lesson for me, that kind of habit of orienting to the world with fix it, change it, what's wrong, what needs to be done here, had a big impact on how I related even to my own experience. So this question of exploring things as they are becomes not so simple, because these filters are operating, these kind of habits of proclivities of what we orient to are happening. They're already happening. It's not just that we see something and react to it. We already orient to pick certain things out of our environment. And so this question of what does it mean to actually see things as they are, what does it mean to understand things as they actually are, is not a simple one. There's a teaching that the Buddha gave to one he wasn't one of his followers. He was somebody who had heard that the Buddha was a great teacher, and he came to find the Buddha to get teachings from him. And this person's name was Bahiya. And he came and he found the Buddha, and he basically said, "Hey, I hear you have really good teachings. Can you teach me your teachings in brief?" And after a few back and forths where the Buddha, I mean, basically the Buddha was getting ready to go on his alms round. So, you know, it was lunchtime and he was going for alms round. And he said to Bahiya, you know, this isn't the time right now. But Bahiya asked him multiple times. He asked him 3 times. And that's kind of a magic number in the Buddha's world. Pretty much any time he was asked something 3 times, he did it. And so after the 3rd time that Bahiya asked his question and said, "Teach me the teachings in brief," the Buddha said, here's how you should train yourself. In the seen is only the seen. In the heard is only the heard. In the sensed is only the sensed. In the cognized is only the cognized. That's how you should train yourself. So basically, you know, in a kind of maybe the parlance of our language now, we could call that something like bare attention. That just we orient towards meeting. There's a sight. A sight is happening. There's a sound. A sound is happening. And yet again, this is not so simple, because we do carry views, opinions, agendas, reactions, beliefs that impact how we respond to the world. And so much of our, I think one of the reasons why this is so important and why the Buddha points to for Bahiya, this is how you should train yourself, because it's within, as something happens, some experience happens in the world, as we experience something, that's something that's just happening. And yet our response to it, or our agenda around it, or our belief around it, or our view around it, in that world, is where we tend to get caught and struggle, and that tends to be where suffering is created. The whole of what the Buddha was exploring, his question, his search came out of, is it possible to be free from suffering, free from struggle, free from even just simple distress or this feeling that things just aren't quite the way I want them to be, that things are off? Is that possible? And so this question of dukkha is the Pali term for that, and I like using the Pali term because the Pali term is so much broader than what comes up for us when we think of the word suffering. You know, the word suffering often conjures up major distress. But that word dukkha also encompasses the subtlety of just the feeling of things just aren't quite right now. Just a feeling of offness that, yeah, I wish it were different. You know, even that, you know, that I wish it were different feeling, that is a belief in the mind, it's a view in the mind, it's an agenda in the mind that is impacting our experience. The view, the wish that it were different is largely where and why we feel like things are off. Now, it is true that there are things happening in the world that, you know, we can say, you know, there's many, many things happening in the world that we can say that is creating suffering, that is, you know, unjust, that what we might say shouldn't be happening. It is happening, perhaps. It is happening. I mean, injustice does happen. And the, you know, one of the places to explore here might be, what might it mean to know that this situation is arising as it is? And rather than thinking or feeling like something is that it's not supposed to be happening. I mean, this is where the conflict happens. You know, it is happening. And we feel like it's not supposed to be happening. And so there's this, like, you know, this struggle, this conflict that happens in our minds. So if we can align ourselves with, yes, this is happening, and not say it shouldn't be happening, but acknowledge, yes, this is happening, one of the things that the mindfulness and the opening to that can do is not like put us in a place of saying, oh, well, that's happening, that's okay. That's not what mindful, heart-open connection to experience tends to do when we meet injustice in the world. What it tends to do is we open to things as they are. An injustice, we see an injustice, and our heart breaks, and we want to take action not out of anger, not out of hatred, not out of resistance, but out of compassion, out of love, out of the wish for there not to be suffering. And so this looking at, exploring, no, things as they are, doesn't mean that we are not going to take action to change things. What we acknowledge in seeing things as they are is that we cannot change what already is, but we can take action to maybe turn the course for the future. And that that action can be taken from a heart of love and wisdom and generosity and kindness rather than hatred. So this, I always have to say that because so often when I explore this topic of things as they are, people think it means just sitting like, you know, oh, things as they are. What gets transmitted is this sense of passivity. And that is not what my understanding of meeting things as they are generates. it begins to generate a sense of action from a different perspective, though. So all of these filters that we meet the world with, things that obscure things as they are, these things are in the way of that heart that can respond from love and compassion and wisdom and generosity. And so this is part of our, what we do, actually. You know, it's not generally possible to just decide, oh, I'm going to start seeing things the way they are. I'm going to stop seeing things from my particular perspective. I'm going to just be a kind of neutral receiver of experience. You know, that's not really possible. But what we can do and what we can be interested in is what the filters we are bringing to experience is. You know, what is the flavor that we're meeting experience with? That, you know, simple flavor of personality type that I talked about before, that's just one of many types of lenses that we can be seeing experience through. We can also be seeing experience through, you know, our conditioning from our families and from our cultures. And these things have an impact on us. And so beginning to be curious about what is it? What are the filters? What are the things that are keeping me from seeing things as they are? If suffering is happening, if a feeling of offness is happening to you, some kind of obscuration to things as they are is functioning in your mind. And so that can be a kind of a question. Okay, there's this feeling of struggle happening right now. There's a feeling frustration or annoyance or agitation, anxiety. What is going on? What are the filters? And the very first place to look is to those feelings themselves. Because those feelings are also what's arising right now. What tends to happen with our emotional reactions is that we, you know, we see the world through those emotional reactions. We might, you know, have a sense of anxiety about something and feel like, oh, I better get that done, or I better, you know, figure this out. So that perspective of anxiety is kind of motivating us to do things in a certain way. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't do things, but to also be aware that that anxiety is happening. Okay, so there's anxiety happening that's kind of propelling a sense of contractedness around this doing. Can we know the anxiety as opposed to having it just be kind of behind the scenes? We think about filters on our experience. You know, often when we are operating or when our mind is obscured with these filters, we are unaware that they're there, at least consciously unaware. We might know that they're there, but somehow we've bought into them. You know, if that anxiety is happening and we think, oh, I better get that done, then we know that we're anxious, but we've bought into the anxiety and we're functioning from the perspective of the anxiety. So one of the first things we can start to do is to recognize, okay, yes, there's anxiety happening. What does that feel like? What is the experience of having anxiety happen? Right there, you are kind of back to things as they are. Because as I said in the teaching to Bahia, he said also, not only in the seen is only the seen and the heard is only the heard, but in the cognized is the cognized. So in the arising of what's happening in our mind, we know that that's happening in our mind. And so anxiety is happening. or frustration or confusion or anger or pride, whatever. If we can be aware, oh yeah, that's happening right now in this. This is what it is to be a human being that's feeling anxious. This is what it is to be a human being that's feeling confused. Then right there we are kind of stepped back into things as they are. It's as if we have, you know, colored lenses on. I think most of us have the sense of, you know, or understand if we have sunglasses on, you know, the color of the sunglasses does impact the color of the world. But after a while of wearing those sunglasses, you forget that. You know, it's just like you're just seeing things as they are. You're just seeing things, and your mind has forgotten that it's seeing through that color. What this practice of kind of stepping back to acknowledge, okay, yes, there's anxiety happening. It's kind of like knowing that you're looking through those colored glasses. Maybe we can't actually take those colored glasses off and say, oh yeah, I can take those off and not be looking through those colored glasses. But we can at least know that it's there. Know that those colored glasses are there. That's the first step. And so we actually don't have to change anything when we see that there are filters or obscurations. We don't have to take them away in order to see things as they are. Actually, seeing things as they are means recognizing, oh, this filter is happening. This filter of anger, this filter of confusion. And so anytime there's suffering, if you can take a step back and say, what is this experience right now? What is the human experience of this state? Then you may, like for instance with that thing with anxiety, of taking action out of anxiety, you may still have to do those actions, but at least you know that filter of anxiety is there, and there may be some small way in which you can make some different choices, a different way of engaging with what you're doing, because you know that filter is there. So the awareness of what's obscuring things as they are is our first step. And there's some simple things we can check, simple tools we can use to begin to explore, you know, what's going on right now? Is there something, because these obscurations to things as they are not always obvious. You know, sometimes they are, you know, glaringly obvious, like I'm in a rage right now, but we're not kind of stepped back in knowing, yes, this is rage. This is what's happening. We are acting on the rage. But sometimes it's really obvious what kind of obscurations are there. Other times it's not so obvious. So a couple of simple tools for this. What's my relationship to what's happening? So there's things happening, you know? Stuff's going on in the world. What's my relationship to that? Do I like it? Do I want it to keep going? Do I think it's good? Do I think it's bad? Do I think it's what's supposed to be happening or not supposed to be happening? What's my relationship? So again, not that we have to stop having that relationship, but sometimes if we ask that question of ourselves, what's my relationship to what's happening? We can find something, see something that's been influencing how we're taking things in that we weren't consciously aware of. So even that simple question, what's my relationship to what's happening? Another useful question can be, what do I believe about what's happening? Because sometimes our beliefs aren't so much about emotions, but they're at a deeper level, in fact, sometimes than our reactions. You know, we just believe that things should be this way and not that way. And these beliefs influence how we respond to the world. So often our beliefs are kind of below our conscious awareness. And so that's another useful question. What do I believe about what's happening? You know, there might be a subtle belief that I'm not capable of accomplishing something, or a subtle belief that it should be one way or the other, certain things should be one way or the other. So just checking in, you know, what do I believe here? So whenever there's a kind of suffering in our experience, there's some kind of obscuration happening that we might be able to touch into with even just these simple questions. But then there are also obscurations, filters, perspectives that we function with that don't particularly cause us suffering, perhaps. But may, well, let's just explore, like, perspectives that come from cultural backgrounds. You know, backgrounds from our family or from a religious culture or an ethnic culture or a culture of a particular economic class or a culture of gender orientation or sexual orientation. We all have so many different kind of perspectives that come into our experience based on who we are, how we've been raised. And, you know, so some of these perspectives of culture, they're pretty deeply in there, and often they aren't so obvious to us. You know, we're raised with a particular family culture or particular ethnic background, and that's just, you know, kind of the way things are. Particularly for those of us perhaps in a dominant culture, in our society, the ethnic background of white people is kind of the dominant culture. And, you know, if you are in that dominant culture, if you were raised in that dominant culture, then, you know, you navigate the world with that perspective. And, you know, it seems like you may not be aware that that's a perspective you're carrying until there may be a time when cultures come into contact, and maybe there's a clash in cultures. Maybe there's a different, you know, way of, you know, even simple things like, you know, when I was traveling in other countries, in third world countries, it's kind of like, how close you stand to somebody, whether you shake hands with them, whether you, you know, maintain physical contact with them while you're talking to them, all kinds of different, whether you maintain eye contact or not. There's so many different cultural patterns and habits that you kind of bump up against, and it's like, whoa, this feels weird, this feels odd. And so if you are in the dominant culture, you're not going to be bumping up against those things, and you're not going to feel like things are odd until, you know, there's perhaps somebody from another culture that you start interacting with. Often what seems to happen is that when there's an interaction between someone from a dominant culture and someone from a non-dominant culture, the perspective of the dominant culture is so strong in that person's mind because it's where they are, wherever they are met. And the person from the non-dominant culture is, you know, kind of trying to find a way to fit in. That what sometimes happens is the person from the non-dominant culture may be experiencing suffering and may be expressing things in ways that, you know, it's like, this doesn't work for me. So, you know, racism is a good example of this, or the struggle between, you know, races in our country right now. The perspective of, you know, just the idea of a police officer, you know, that the seeing somebody of color holding something in their hand, the first thing that goes into their mind, often the police officer may be, oh, that's a gun. You know, so the, you know, the perspectives of culture really impact how we interact between cultures. And so sometimes in the realm of these kind of filters, the filters of culture, the filters of race, ethnicity, gender, sexual orientation, the suffering that is experienced there, what you may not notice for yourself suffering around holding a particular perspective, but if there's suffering in the field, you know, I'm trying to think of an example, a simple example. So here's an example. I heard a story about, there were two sisters going through a line in a grocery store, and one was a light-skinned African American, and another a dark-skinned African American, and the light-skinned African American went through first and got out her check and paid for the things and you know, finished her transaction, and then her sister went through, and she got out her checkbook, and the cashier said, "I need to see two forms of ID." And you know, so there was a very different perspective that cashier brought to the interaction, and the woman. The dark-skinned African American felt so much shame and so much, you know. So there's quite a bit of suffering in her having that experience, and her sister spoke. Her sister said, "Why are you treating her differently than you treated me?" And the cashier said, "Oh, well, I know you. You know, you come here all the time." And the light-colored sister said, "No, actually, I've only lived here for a month. My sister has lived here for years." And so there was suffering in the interaction, and the light-skinned sister bringing it up made it obvious to the cashier that there was suffering. It made the cashier feel bad, you know, made the cashier feel like, oh, you know, and the manager got involved, and so the suffering began to be experienced in the wider situation. And so what I'm pointing to here is that sometimes when we may have filters that we are unaware of, but if we are interested in exploring this, then when we engage in the world, when we move in the world, if something that we do, even though we're not intentionally, you know, actively thinking, oh yes, I'm you know, I'm going to make this person feel bad about themselves, or you know, but it's just the perspective we're operating from. We're not intentionally doing that. even if we're not intentionally doing that, then if there's suffering in the interaction, what we are asked to do is to ask the question, what did I not know? What did I not understand? What am I missing here? So that it's not just that we, you know, walk through life and say, well, my intentions are good and I'm not suffering, so any suffering that they're feeling is on them. You know, it's their problem, it's their doing, or it's, the, you know, they have to get over it. But rather to have the curiosity of what is it that I could learn here? What filter maybe am I unaware of that I can be interested in? And so suffering, again, points out to us where there may be obscurations. You know, that we are asked to not only look at suffering that happens in our own system, but when we act in the world, we're also asked to reflect on, is what we're doing causing harm or affliction to others? And not to, you know, beat ourselves up or blame ourselves, but be curious. Is there something I didn't understand? Is there some filter, something that I didn't see, something that was hiding things as they are? So we can be curious about this. It's not about, like, telling ourselves that anytime there's obscurations, we might have the perspective of, oh, there's another, I'm angry again or frustrated again. But what we're asked to do rather is to be curious about it. What's this like? And that itself will begin to help us to kind of step back. Ah, this is what it's like to have that filter working. So, question. Yeah, and use the mic.
So my question is, how do you differentiate those filters from your internal alarm that might alert you to something's wrong? So it might be the same situation where you don't necessarily want to discriminate against anybody, but you have this gut instinct that something about this situation doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any tips or suggestions on how to navigate through that?
Well, I think the first thing you have to do is to acknowledge, yeah, this feels that there is a feeling of perhaps of danger, you know, or a feeling of something feels like it's not right. So, you know, you can acknowledge that. You know, you don't have to try to not feel that. So acknowledge that. And, you know, it may be that just that simple acknowledgement helps you to begin to distinguish. There's not like a silver bullet here, you know. And I think it is a process. So it's a process of exploring. I'll give you a story from my own practice on this. You know, it's subtle, but, you know, there's been a period of time starting, you know, several years ago where I began looking at this question of what is my relationship in particular to African Americans, and what's my kind of default mode. And what I discovered was that whenever I saw an African American, there was some clenching, a little bit of tension happening. And so I just began paying attention to that. I didn't try to stop it. I acknowledged it. But it also, just that very acknowledging helped me to recognize it, kind of like there was an immediate clenching, but then it helped me recognize, you know, there's nothing particularly to be clenched about here. You know, so again, just the opening to not trying to say I shouldn't be clenching, but just like, oh, clenching is happening. What's that like? And as I kept exploring that, it was very, very interesting because I found myself in situations with people, and I was just kind of like feeling into it. I'd notice an African-American person, and I'd be feeling into that. And I would catch their eye, or they would look up and see me looking at them, and they would smile and say, "Hey, how are you?" And I'd go, "Hi, how are you?" You know, it just like it began to rewire my mind. And, you know, so it's had some quite interesting interactions. You know, one that kind of stood out for me was waiting for a friend to come off the airplane, and I was standing there, you know, kind of looking around at the people, and I saw an African-American man standing a few feet away, you know, 10, 15 feet away, and there was a little bit of that clenching there, but, you know, he looked up and he saw me and he smiled and he came right over and he just, you know, he just started a conversation. And it was like that had never happened to me before. So my willingness to begin to start from where I was, which was from the clench, has created the conditions for pretty much, you know, the clench doesn't happen anymore in that kind of pervasive way. So I encourage you to explore that feeling, and, you know, so if it's really strong, you know, you may want to, I don't know, take some action, leave, get yourself out of there or something, but you know, it's, I would encourage you to explore the feeling itself, and it's like something about the mindfulness of what's going on begins to help us distinguish what's kind of legitimate and useful and what's excessive. So I just encourage a kind of beginning exploration of that feeling. And now it's time to stop. So thank you for your attention.